This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. North Carolina has a rich history in the arts. The state has been home to a variety of artists, including writers like Elizabeth Spencer, Maya Angelou, and David Sedaris, and musicians like Doc Watson, John Coltrane, and Shirlette Ammons. And for the last 50 years, the North Carolina Arts Council has made a conscious effort to promote the arts. This year, the council decided to highlight some of the talent our state has produced. The project is called 50 for 50. Wayne Martin is executive director of the North Carolina Arts Council. Welcome back, Wayne.
Well, thank you, Frank. It's great to be here.
Happy 50th anniversary.
Thank you.
Tell us more about 50 for 50. What is it?
Well, that's just short for 50 artists for 50 years. The Arts Council was created in 1967. It was really inspired by two ideas, or I guess maybe I should say ideals. One is that the arts in North Carolina are rich, they deserve to be nourished and sustained and developed. And that was a realization that occurred in the 1960s. And the other idea was that the arts should be available for all citizens. Everyone should be able to participate in the arts no matter where they live.
Well, and the first part of that is not, it's an easy thing for us to understand now, given our real appreciation of what is local and how local is good. But back then, art was something that the Europeans did.
Well, I think that's right, and I won't speak for other parts of the country, but being a Southerner, you know, that was the message, and being older, I should say, to the listeners can't see me, but when I was young, that was the message that I got growing up. So, you know, the creation of the North Carolina Arts Council and in a sense, the National Endowment for the Arts, I think was one of the first attempts to, you know, create arts policy and look at what needed to be in place that, well, the arts are an asset, and then what needed to be in place so that they could be utilized both for individuals and for the, you know, for the communities and for the state.
So you've archived the artists, the 50 artists that you're profiling as part of this celebration, and you've talked to them and interviewed them, and the archive is on your website, and they're also being released as part of a podcast. Well, David Sedaris, NPR listeners will know, New Yorker readers will certainly know David Sedaris, and of course, raised in Raleigh, North Carolina. But he talks about, as part of that, and with your interview with him, about the importance of the arts community, having an arts community in a place like North Carolina, as an artist like him grows up.
It was finding a community. You know, it's that way you feel when you find your people and you look around and you think, oh my God, where have you been? I don't feel so alone now. And that's what the museum shows did, and the Wake County show, and putting on a performance piece and going to theater in the park and watching a play. It all made you feel like, oh, it's not just me, and there are these other people.
Best-selling author David Sedaris in his profile for the North Carolina Arts Council's 50 for 50 project. I'm talking with NC Arts Council Executive Director Wayne Martin. And you also mentioned that the idea of being Southern is something that had to be promoted. The idea is that we have art here and rural arts as well, that what's happening in these rural communities is art and needs to be celebrated.
Yeah, and of course in the South here, if you look at the great art that's been produced, it's often very much associated with place.
Yeah.
And so I think early on with the North Carolina Arts Council, we realized that all places are important, whether they were rural or our cities. I mean, there was great art going on in both places. Right. And there's a kind of an exchange that takes place. Mm-hmm. And but that cut with David is really interesting, because he was talking about early in his career, after he had graduated from college, and how important it is for there to be an artist community and nonprofit arts organizations in a community that are giving artists an opportunity to spread their wings and fly and to try things. So, and that was a decision early on that we at the Arts Council had to make, you know, how we were going to do this. And one way was to create a network of arts councils and discipline-specific nonprofits.
You know, you also talked with Shirlette Ammons, who is a musician and a poet now based in Durham, again, about the importance of having that kind of community and that kind of support to her career.
I think investing in arts that come from rural areas in North Carolina is important. I'm from rural North Carolina, and I was fortunate to be encouraged to be creative as a kid, but not until I left rural North Carolina did I understand the beauty and the importance of the stories within me that were passed down to me.
Poet and musician Sherlette Ammons in her profile for the 50 for 50 project from the North Carolina Arts Council. I'm talking to Executive Director Wayne Martin. Tell us more about the artist that you've chosen for this.
Well, we chose, it was hard to choose just 50 because we have so many great artists in North Carolina, but we tried to find artists who represented different parts of the state and from different backgrounds. I mean, and also who are creating art in a number of different genres. I mean, we have musicians, photographers and filmmakers, visual artists, writers and poets, costume designers, dancers, an architect, and even a creative chef specializing in regional cuisine. So we really tried to look, you know, North Carolina is really a diverse state.
Right.
And we tried to have that diversity represented. And we only asked them, we started out by only asking them two questions. One, what is it about North Carolina that's influenced your artistry? That was the one. And the second one was, what needs to be in place so that we can continue to be strong 50 years from now? And of course, the conversations led to all different places, but that was the through line, those two questions.
You know, we've been talking about the number of people who have either come from here or really spend most of their lives here and what they've learned by being from North Carolina. But the other thing in arts, culture will do is attract people from other places. Other artists find out about North Carolina and say, wow, what a place to grow. And one of those was MC Taylor. He's a musician. He's part of the American folk band His Golden Messenger, who's originally from California.
I think the thing that makes North Carolina a good place to be an artist for me, the thing that drew me here is that there's a deep musical history here that I'm interested in and that has been important to me, to like my formation as a musician.
MC Taylor, a member of the American folk band His Golden Messenger, a clip from his profile from the 50 for 50 project from the North Carolina Arts Council. Executive Director Wayne Martin is with me. So that's another important part of this. I mean, this history, you've got 50 people who are here now, but their lineage goes way, way back.
Yeah, yeah. And it was interesting listening to that. And people can go to 50 for 50 and hear the rest of that interview, because he says in that interview, it was going to rural communities and hearing people play blues and funk without, just because they love to do it, because it's part of who they are. That's what kind of helped him find himself as a musician. One reason he wanted to be here. And I think in North Carolina, that's what is so amazing. I mean, I hate to say it's in the water, but it is kind of in the water. You know, there are people creating art all across the state. Some self-designate as artists, some don't, but what they create is fantastic.
And what they bring with them is fantastic as well from other places. I would like to bring in one of those artists who's profiled as part of the 50 for 50 project. Asha Bala is the director and instructor at Leela School of Dance in Cary. Asha, welcome to The State of Things.
Thank you, Greg. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you. You specialize in a particular kind of dance from southern India, where you're from. Tell us about the dance and what it is and a little bit about that dance form.
Well, the dance form is known as Bharatanatyam, and it is a classical dance. It's one of the oldest classical dances of India, with a rich and well-defined vocabulary of movements that is made up of intricate rhythmic movements, as well as highly expressive movements of hand gestures and eye movements that are capable of conveying a whole range of emotions from the from the subtle to the abstract to the highly dramatic. So these are the two well-defined aspects of the dance. But the dance form as we know it today was developed in the temples of southern India as part of the daily worship. So it has an inherent spiritual quality to it, with themes that convey a deep philosophical thought through tales from Indian mythology of gods and demons, from Indian legends of kings and queens. That is the bedrock of this dance. But the most astounding nature of this dance is that despite it being developed so many years ago, despite having a technique that is so well-defined and structured, it has the ability in it to expand and incorporate modern ideas, modern themes with the traditional ones. And that's just what we did in our recent school program. We created a fun piece for the young students titled Sam I Am. It was an adaptation from Dr. Sue's book, Green Eggs and Ham. And these young kids did it to Bharatanatyam movements, to music that combined Indian percussion and traditional jazz music. They loved it. The audience loved it. And for the senior students, we did another beautiful piece, another powerful piece, which addressed the recent social phenomena, the Me Too movement, through the lens of a traditional story taken from the Indian epic, the Mahabharata. So, yes, it is true. This is a very ancient dance form, but it is constantly evolving and reinventing itself. It has a strong survival instinct, if I may say so.
It does, and it needed that because it was banned under British rule, right?
Correct, correct. That is true. You know, this dance tradition that took so many years to develop into this rich classical dance form was banned during the British rule. So for that, a little bit, if you step back into the history, you'll realize that this dance developed the way it did because of the tremendous patronage it enjoyed from the royal houses of South India. And all there were several royal dynasties, and they were great patrons of art and literature. And all the art forms, whether it was sculpture, painting, architecture, dance, music, flourished and thrived in this atmosphere. And it was in this cultural environment that Bharatanatyam reigned supreme. As the dance fit for the gods, as part of the temple worship in these beautiful temples which were commissioned by these kings. But it was not known as Bharatanatyam at that time. It was known as Sadar Natyam or Dasyatam, which means the dance of the Devadasis. So these Devadasis were temple dancers who were dedicated to the service of God and temple. And they came from a traditional lineage of dancers where this art form was passed down from mother to daughter to granddaughter. And they were highly accomplished artists, not only in dance, but in all the other related art forms and statecraft, warfare. And they held a very special place in society, and so did their dance. But thereafter, India was invaded by several times by the Mughals, the Turks, the Mongols. And with every invasion, India became a little weaker, and so did her dance tradition. And the final blow came when the British colonized India and ruled over India for more than 200 years. So their Victorian morals just could not fathom how a physical art form like dance could be a form of worship. And they were not able to appreciate the aesthetics of this dance. And India was by then much weakened and was unable to withstand this onslaught against her culture. But when the independence movement gained momentum, there were many forward-thinking visionaries who worked tirelessly to revive this dance form from its state of decline.
Not an easy thing to do if you think about what you described earlier, this lineage of a very careful, very particular forms of technique that are passed from one teacher to the student, teacher-student, that kind of lineage. A 200-year interruption can be fatal to that kind of...
It was in a state of complete decline, and it had to be reinvented. And I said that by then the Devadasi tradition was abolished, completely gone. Mm-hmm. So it had to be reinvented. So there was no Dasyatam, and it was given a new name. And that is the name by which we know it today, Bharatanatyam.
So what does it mean to then come to a place like North Carolina and teach this dance? Who are your students, and how important is it to you that you're teaching it here?
Well, it has been a very enriching experience. I came here to teach dance at the school, at the high school level, as well as at the Fayetteville State University, and now I have my own school. I teach it to the diaspora. So at each level, it has been different, the way I approach the teaching to them. When I taught it at the school level and at the university level, it was you're teaching a culturally specific dance form to people who are not from this culture. So you're given a limited amount of time. So it was important that I change my approach to teaching. So I approached it as giving these students an insight into another culture through the lens of Bharatanatyam. So breaking up the movements into bite-sized pieces made it more accessible to them, as well as combining lessons in technique with lessons in history, the mythology, the philosophy, gave them a more rounded perspective and appreciation of this dance and the culture it represented. And with this, what I realized was that with this understanding came a newfound respect for this culture. And I wish we could expand that, that respect and that understanding and have Indian classical dance in more schools and more colleges across the country. When you study another culture through the medium of a rich art form like dance, their appreciation and their respect for that culture is so much more. And if we can, we'll have a generation, if you're able to foster this respect and understanding, it would be great.
Well, Wayne Martin, it also gets back to a point that you made earlier about the exchanges that go on. We were talking about rural and urban, but the fact is people come here from other places precisely because there are so many different forms here. And then when you add international cultures as well, this, it seems to me, is all part of what you're talking about.
Absolutely. Of course, Asha is receiving the North Carolina Heritage Award, and because there is a community, strong community of people here for whom this dance is their heritage, and then there are all these people who are becoming interested in it, and so there it's this strong connection to South India, but they are North Carolinians too, and that this is in a sense I feel like this is part of my culture now too, her dance. So I think that is the really extraordinary thing about North Carolina. We have such a diversity of tradition where communities shape these art forms, but the individuals within the art forms are innovating to keeping it fresh. And that's what's, I think, partly attracting a lot of young people and others to North Carolina.
Well, and then once they get here, Asha, you're also teaching this to the diaspora, right? The East
Indian,
and that has a different gloss for you and a
different kind
of importance, right? Tell us about that.
Well, Bharatanatyam has come to be seen as the the epitome of refinement of Indian culture. So many of the people in the diaspora want to learn this dance form. But I love teaching these kids. It's a pleasure teaching these young students, introducing them to the intricate nuances of Bharatanatyam. But it has been a huge learning process, trying to navigate the challenges of, again, teaching a culturally specific dance form to these young students who could be of Indian origin, but they are born and raised over here. So they are products of this culture, and they are so far removed from the country in which this dance originated. So there was the need was to adapt and modify the teaching methodology to, again, break it down for them, to make it more accessible for these young students and to sustain their interest. So that was the easy part. The more challenging part is to make them aware of the social traditions that are such an integral part of this dance. And it is through these traditions that we inculcate a deep sense of respect for this art form and for its learning. And in India, these traditions are part of the culture. It's part of the artistic environment. So students absorb it in the natural course of learning. But here, when I came here, I realized that I have to consciously and proactively educate the students and even their parents on what these social traditions are and to make them aware of them. Like just an example is to tell them the significance of the bells that they wear around their feet, to explain to them that it is the most sacred symbol of the dance and how it should be treated.
Thank you very much, and congratulations on your Heritage Award.
Thank you.
Asha Bala is the director and instructor of the Leela School of Dance in Cary. Wayne Martin is executive director of the North Carolina Arts Council. Wayne, thank you as well.
Thank you, Frank.
You can learn more about the 50 for 50 project at our website, stateofthings.org. Coming up, another Heritage Award winner, mandolin player Tony Williamson, live on the State of Things. Stay with us.